It's Fiducian Day. It's the news, according to me. Well, good Friday morning. It is Financial Friday, Fiduciary Financial Friday this morning. It is January 2nd, the second day of the 237 toothpicks. We have 2026 is what it is. It's the second day of 2026, January 2nd, Friday, 9:20 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I am your host, Kevin. And we are here with the news, according to me, as far as that's concerned. I am not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a financial counselor. I am a guy with a bunch of opinions, and this show is for entertainment purposes only. Any allegations I might make are probably true, but they may not be. They may not be. We'll see how that works out. I have a few things to talk about today. Fridays are a day that I've kind of reserved now for talking about financial issues, financial things, I should say. Financial stuff, and the thing. Okay, you probably hear a lot of background noise. There's a lot of background noise here. You might hear the dog occasionally. I'm in the location of Florida right now. I'm up in the Panhandle area, or where the Panhandle meets the Pan, in that area. I will be here for another few days, and I'll be traveling a little bit. I have to do some trips. I'll be up in the Appleton, Wisconsin area, Appleton, Green Bay area. And we'll see how that works out. It should be a very interesting time, going from relatively warm temperatures here in Florida. We woke up this morning, I think it was like 39 degrees outside. Yesterday it was 29 degrees outside. Not exactly, but it does get up nice enough to walk around in t-shirt and shorts, go for a hike in the afternoon. So I got up 65 yesterday. Supposed to get up in 70s tomorrow. However, it's going to be raining tomorrow, so the next couple days. And I have to head out of town on Monday morning, see how that goes. We're going to be at a totally different location. What is the problem? You got something to chew on there. What's your issue? I gave him something to chew on. Chew on that, or you can stop your barking. That's what you can do, or else I'll take it away from you. Just let you keep barking. If I put up with your barking. Anyway, got the puppies and a cat with us. This particular adventure we're having. I have, and in my cup, this is the most important thing, in my cup I have chai, my Big Train chai with coconut cream creamer. I apologize. I don't know why he's barking. There's no reason for him to be barking right now. I have no idea why he's barking. He just wants to be a nuisance, I guess. I don't know. I'm not sure what the issue is. Barking at the other dog. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I hope you can hear me okay. What's happening here? Does not bode well for me. I might have to put a pillow over his head for about 10 minutes. Might help. Anyway, so I have chai in my cup. And I have a cup of, this is my last cup of sweet peach tea. That was homemade sweet peach tea. I would think that I could find some down here, but we are in the middle of nowhere. This place is like, there's a little bitty town near here with a hardware store. There's not even a Lowe's within 30 miles. I was going to do some repairs on some things, and it's quite a ways away. Now, the other place we're going is closer to Pensacola, and there's a lot of stuff around that area. It'd be a little bit different. Of course, I'm not going to be there really at all. I'll be gone. Well, my wife will be there unless I decide to stay a little bit longer. That would mean not heading back home. We'll see how it goes. But basically, I'm going to move, head out, and then come back, and then we're going to head out again. So we're going to head back home. So that's how it's going to work out. For me, anyway. She's going to have a few days there. Pretty nice place there, actually. Hopefully everything works fine for her. So I'm all gone. All right. That's about all I got to say about that. There's a few things I want to talk about, this whole thing with it's just one thing with this Governor Waltz situation. Tim Waltz, they're apparently are closing in. Now he said some things here. I want to try to go back to this and
because this isn't just about play. Money.
Well, this
it's
is
also about
votes. This is what happens when they target. Okay, I want to play this particular. I hope you can hear this. Okay, I'm going to play this particular clip. This is Tim Walz, and that's what I was talking about the other day. I wanted to play this little clip before the end of the week, because what we have is a situation where we have Tim Walz. He just says word salad stuff and then throws in comments and never really says anything. Now, he's said some other things. It was a response he had to someone who was a reporter who asked him some questions. And he went off on this little tirade. But this is the example of something he does. I wish I could play it, because I think I played it on the show a while back. I think it was last week I played it on the show. Explained how ridiculous it was. And he said a whole bunch of stuff and never said anything. It's like he has five different subjects going on in his head all at the same time, and they all come out of his mouth in just this shotgun effect of a sentence that means nothing. If you actually analyze it, that's what we're going to do with this particular sentence right now. We're going to analyze what it is that he says here. And I want to get into some financial stuff, because there's some issues about finances that I want to talk about with regard to just general finances and the human experience, especially with public education. So I'm going to play this little clip here. And let's go. Here we go.
This is what happens when they target communities for their own benefit. This is what happens when they scapegoat. And this is what happens when they no longer hide the idea of white supremacy.
So it's all right. This is what happens when they target. What did he say? This is what happens when they target.
Did the governor's office act like
I want to play this again, because it's.
Instead of the scammers. And when the emotional spin.
Here we go.
You ask why doors are locked and phones don't answer, and slap a stick.
This is what happens when they target communities for their own benefit.
This is what happens when they target communities for their own benefit. What exactly is the benefit here in targeting a community? First of all, they're targeting the fraud that's going on. If these people were honest, hardworking people and they were starting daycares and working hard, you know, my memory of immigration back in the 70s, as I was growing up, you know, we had the Vietnamese refugees that we brought here to this country. I have not met one yet that has not been an extremely hard work. They were all hard working. They were willing to do all kinds of odd, weird jobs, just working hard and doing what and being honest, an honest day's work. I never really heard of much of any kind of fraud. They didn't take government benefits. I think they got some kind of stipend when they first got here. But of course, then that was all that whole program. Anytime the government starts a program where there's a lot of money flying around, you know, politicians find a way to tap their toe in that, dip their toe in it, and get some kind of financial reward out of it, whether it's through their campaign or through people next to them. You know, ask Ilhan Omar how she went from being $30,000 or $40,000 in debt when she first started as a congressperson. Now she's worth $30 million. This whole thing between Sean Ryan and Dan Crenshaw is continuing to boil over. Dan Crenshaw, he's a bully. He's saying all kinds of weird stuff, and now he's talking like I'm going to show up. You're going to be there, you know, kind of thing. I'm going to show up on your show, and it keeps escalating. And Dan Crenshaw is the one who's escalating everything. Sean Ryan basically said he wanted him to sign a regular release for it to come on his show. It's something that everybody has signed. President Clinton, or President Trump signed it. All kinds of people. It's just a boilerplate thing. They didn't want to sign. Dan Crenshaw was too good for that. He had to send all kinds of red stuff. You know, they didn't want to redo the contract, renegotiate this release that they had to sign. He wouldn't do it. And he finally, the day they were supposed to have this interview today. They were supposed to record it today. This morning he said, "Nope, not gonna let you do it. Just this is." Not the way I operate. It's not the way we do things. I'm not going to bend around to your little disclosure here that he wants to. It was a kind of a weird deal. So this is the kind of stuff these people play. But these, it's just this whole thing about investments and how government makes so much, how these government bureaucrats make so much money on a salary that's, less than $200,000 a year or whatever. They bloated themselves with a raise. I think they may actually make $225 a year. Dan Crenshaw was a big whiner and complainer about that. Well, we haven't got a you know, representatives haven't gotten a raise since, you know, 1942 or whatever it was he came out and said, 2005 or whatever it was. Haven't gotten a raise since then. Well, maybe because you don't deserve one. Maybe when your approval rating, you know, gets above 5%, that would be great. So the that's what's happening right now. And this whole thing where he says this kind of stuff, they target communities for this and that. When they scapegoat, he just says, when they scapegoat. And again, we've covered this. If you look up the definition of scapegoat, no, that's not, they don't understand that definition. In fact, it's kind of interesting. I've heard several other commentators as well now say the same, exact same thing. As well as some other commentators are now saying, you know, these Somalis who are coming here, they obviously don't have the wherewithal to do all this stuff and maneuver through all the federal bureaucracy to get the funding that they're getting for these daycare centers and set up all these organizations. It wasn't their idea. This is, you know, somebody's the mastermind behind this thing, and somebody's looking the other way. Somebody in the bureaucracy knows what's going on because they're helping them with it. They're getting assistance somewhere. They're getting more than just financial aid. They didn't just come here and figure out the system and start bilking it. Somebody taught them how to do this. Now, of course, now the last thing he says here is very interesting.
Scapegoat. And this is what happens when they no longer hide the idea of white supremacy.
They no longer hide the idea of white supremacy. This is what happens when they no longer hide the idea of white supremacy. What does that mean? The idea of white supremacy. We're not hiding the idea of white supremacy. You no longer hide the idea of white supremacy. What does that even mean? That's if an English teacher looked at that sentence, they would say, what is the participle? I'm not good at English, so I don't. Sorry, I can't break down a sentence. And there's got to be a subject, a verb, a noun, all those kinds of things. You know, it's just, how do you break that down? What is the subject? And who are they? This is what happens when they scapegoat. This is what happens when they don't hide the idea of white supremacy. The idea. I don't think the word idea was the proper word there. This is just him talking off the top of his head. With just not saying anything, but just blabbing on, sort of what it amounts to. So, okay, time to change gears, time to change subjects. I'm going to take a sip of peach tea. We got a little ice cube in with that one. That's good. That's good. Good stuff. Good peachy. It's getting peachier. It's finally the peach flavor is kind of coming through now. There's still peaches, and all the peaches are in my cup now. Maybe a sip of chai might be good too. The little hot, little cold, little hot. Yeah, that's good. That's good stuff right there. Now, having said all of that, I don't think my little chewy thing that I gave the dog is going to last another 15, 20 minutes for the show. But we'll see how this works out. Finances, being financially literate. I'm going to talk a little bit about the emphasis that we put on financial planning, money management, and just basic general understanding of how finances and taxes and income works in our society. We have an interesting, interesting dilemma in this country. I went through high school. I don't think they learned what they learned. I think I probably learned more about finances in going through school where I went through school at the time that I went through school. I graduated in 1980. So my time in the 70s was spent going through school, and it was pretty, you know, public school at that time was fairly, it was still pretty dull in terms of its ability to really prepare you for life. However, we had really good teachers. The people who were, you know, the culture was different then. This was, you know, it was just a very different culture. Most of the teachers back then were Christians. Most of them were pretty open about their faith. At least I kind of grew up in a farm school. It was a farming community. We didn't really have a town where my school was. It was literally in the middle of a cornfield. I think there was 92 people in my graduating class. I was ranked number 91 from the, you know, one from the bottom. But I passed, and they just wanted to get me through. Basically, they just, you know, they were done with me. They didn't want to see me again, so they let me go. The interesting thing about all this is, the point is, there was no real discussion about tax. Now we had a couple classes where teachers would make some inferences and some things about taxes and what taxation is. So we knew what, but there's this whole thing of, you know, you can't get away from death and taxes. And yet those are two things we don't talk about in high school. They don't talk about death. They don't talk about, you know, what happens to you after you die, because that's, you know, that would be religious. And they don't talk to you about taxes and how you have to pay all these taxes and ways to get around these taxes. And in terms of how do you protect your wealth? How do you protect what you have from the tax man? And not in a, enough, you know, deceitful or illegal way. What is the best way to establish your life? They don't talk about any of that. The closest I got probably to a money management class in school, in high school, which, every time I think about it, I'm more convinced of what happened there. I didn't recognize what was actually going on in that class until about 2 years after high school. Started realizing what had happened there. But here's how it went. I took an accounting class, Accounting 101, they called it. Now, they had an Accounting 102. I think that I actually took 101 and 102. I can't remember how, I just can't remember. I took both semesters. All I know is we called them semesters. So we had semesters in this school. And we had the first half of the year, and you could opt out in the second semester, which I think is why it was called Accounting 102. I think it was Accounting 102. So this is the way it would work. We went in. They basically gave us a ledger. They told us, here's all your expenses. Here's how you fill out a ledger. Here's how you do all your expenses. Here's how, you know, so you learn the difference between gross and net and all this stuff. And you're like almost like a business accounting type class. And it got complicated. There were formulas you had to kind of work through. Of course, this is before the day. Nobody had a calculator back then. I remember there was one point where I had this little digital calculator that would do very basic stuff. And it was a big, big deal to be able to work some coagents and all this other stuff that some of these really advanced calculators could do. But the little screen was monochrome and only had, you know, it had a little, it didn't really have a screen as such. It had little lights in it. And it just kind of lit up these little monochrome lights, LEDs. LED was a big deal. LCD was, I think, the first one, I think, and then LED was a big deal because then it was more of an LED screen, but it only did certain things to, even on the LED screen. And then they got to the point where they had the, my dog's probably going to start barking. I think he's just finished up his chewy thing and he's going to start barking, pretty sure. It's typical of what he does. If that happens, I may have to pause this thing and just destroy him. He's getting done with it. So anyway, we went through this class, and the first semester most of the people in the class were girls. I think there were three other guys besides myself. There was about 10 girls, I think, and then there was probably four of us that were guys. The teacher was blatantly didn't like guys in the class. You could just tell her favorites, we called them the teacher's pets, were all girls. She treated them like they couldn't do anything wrong, and everything we did was, anytime we would answer, even if it was the right answer, it was said the wrong way. So it was always something about it. And I remember this very vividly because it was such a big deal. At the second semester, none of the other guys came back. I was the only guy in the class because they didn't like it. They didn't like being treated the way they were being treated by this teacher. And I, looking back on it, I don't think anybody ever said anything about it, but it was pretty obvious that there was a reason why all the girls came back. None of the guys came back for the second semester. So it was kind of a interesting semester for me. It was difficult. Because she still didn't treat me very well. so I was kind of the odd guy out, obviously. And So it was very, just, I didn't learn anything. I didn't learn anything about, you know, I learned everything about how to make a ledger, how to keep books. And when I started my first business, I think I was 19 years old, first real business that where I had to actually do a Schedule C and file taxes as a business and that kind of thing. That was the first time I did that was, you know, I at least knew how to keep books well enough at that time. And I could do that part of it, which was helpful to some degree. At the same time, I did not, but they didn't teach you anything about taxes. Didn't teach you anything about actually money management, you know, how financially invest, investing, nothing about investing, saving money, pay, you know, staying out, what debt was like, what does it mean to go into debt? There'd be the occasional story from a teacher might tell a story about something about getting a home loan or what the process was like or something. It was very surfacey. It was nothing very, very significant in terms of instruction or teaching about how to manage debt, what debt is, what money is. Of course, not back then. We had just gotten away from the gold standard or silver standard, whatever we were on, whatever to call it. I think it was silver standard, basically. We had, so money was, which speaking of silver, the prices is out of control. There's something weird going on. A lot of different theories about what's going on with the whole silver industry and what's going to happen to it in the next few years. It has become a commodity of industrial size. There's a huge issue with the whole thing about silver and what it's going to be used for in the coming era of AI in terms of battery capabilities, all kinds of things that silver is going to be used for. That it's power generation. They're going to have a hard time controlling the physical supply now, which is that's where the issue is going to come from. It's what's happening with the folks with paper trading silver they've been able to control it. The problem is there's only about 8% of the actual silver out there that they're using paper control of. It's kind of a weird thing. There's a name for it. It's arbitrage or whatever it's called. It's called something where they fractional banking or whatever you want to call it. So the silver market has been controlled for a very long time. It's been controlled. It's been kept down around the $26 an ounce range somewhere in there, which is ridiculous because the disparity between silver and gold is ridiculous. I mean, in terms of the price difference has been ridiculous. Now, there's this whole thing about it possibly might be spiking. It might be going up. It has gone up to, I think, over $82 an ounce recently. And of course there's the paper trading thing is they're trying to control the price of silver. They're trying to use it as a regulatory, instrument of some kind within some certain banking institutions. They're trying to, the bank, there's this theory that the banks are actually controlling some of this. We'll just see what happens with it. But in the meantime, my main concern, my main point of this topic is the public school system, the public education system. Why it doesn't have more emphasis on something that is so critical to life. Why they leave it up to, and it's not, and maybe part of the fundamental issue is money is actually mentioned a lot in the Bible. Money is a very spiritual thing. Where your treasure is, there your heart is also. There's a lot of things that where Messiah talks about finances and money and where you put your money and how, you know, render under Caesar what is Caesar's. There's, you know, just different things like that. All kinds of references to silver and gold and wealth and prosperity and all those kinds of things. What you consider prosperous? Like in the New Testament, there's all kinds of philosophies on what is true prosperity, and it's. So it does become kind of this spiritual, almost has a religious tone to it. In some cases, actually does because some people do worship money. Now, money is not the root of all evil. First of all, Scripture does not say money is the root of all evil. I hear that all the time from people. Money is the root of all kinds of evil. When you see evil of all kinds, there's all different kinds of evil. When you see it there, it is the basis for much of what we, many kinds of evil. Not all evil. And money's not evil. But it is the root of all kinds of evil. And what that means is many, many times behind the scenes, when you see corrupt politicians, when you see it almost always involves money or power or wealth or influence that is purchased with money. The influence and power that comes along with money is typically the downfall of many people because it is the root of all kinds of evil. There are people who are, and this Nick Invests, if you have a chance to check out that, if you like YouTube, every morning this guy puts out a video, and I think it's very, very good. In fact, the one of them he put out the other day, this is the inspiration of today's show for this whole issue of education and financial literacy, financial education and understanding. Part of the whole idea behind this is a show that he had, and it talked about how we spend so much time learning things that don't matter in life that much. I mean, it's good to know history. It's good to know math and science and all these kind. Those are things that are good to know. But at its core, in the middle of all of that, none of that, all those things will do you no good if you don't understand how to manage your funds. You don't understand what wealth is. You don't understand what generational wealth and just being able to build prosperity. None of that matters. Pythagorism's, whatever. You just all this. You learn all this stuff, and then you walk out of high school, and you know nothing about life, other than what your parents have taught you. And this is why some kids. I've got a very good friend of mine. Came from a it was a difficult situation. His wife, I think his wife's father. Was actually a very, very wealthy guy. And the money, what she saw was that money kind of ruined the family. And they, she was kind of adverse to even having money. Like wealth is a bad thing. And this is a very common trait. One of the things that he talks about in his most recent show, I think it was 2 days ago, was talking about the psychology of, he talks about the psychology of money and how people treat money and how they see it and how it affects their lives. And one of the things that there are people who grow up with this idea that wealthy people are evil. Wealth is, and this is very, very much a part of I would say a lot of religious cultural upbringings. Where they give this idea that having money is just vain, it's all vanity, you shouldn't have any money, you shouldn't be seeking money or trying to make money, that's all evil. I think some of that came from my father. There was a little bit of this, it's a poverty mentality is what it is, and it's this idea that because you're in poverty, you're somehow more spiritual because you are in poverty. Believe me, there's just as much temptation for a person who lives in poverty. Now, if you can live in poverty and be content, that's awesome. If you can live a wealthy, productive lifestyle and be content as well, that's because sometimes having money makes you want more money. It's the amount of greed, it does not necessarily diminish. In fact, having money will just magnify, having wealth will magnify the kind of person you are in many ways. It just makes it louder. If you're a very poor person and you're very you're very greedy and you're poor and you have nothing, or you're very envious of others, you're coveting of what other people have. And by the way, that's what most people do. When someone sees you in a fancy car, they're not looking at you thinking, "Oh, that guy's cool. He's got a fancy car." No, they're thinking, "Gee, I would look good in that car." That's the mentality that people have. They don't think about how cool you are. You might think everybody's looking at you and thinking you're the great, you're great because you're in a cool car or whatever it is. What cool outfit, cool suit, cool watch, whatever it is. That's not what they think. They look at it with envy. They think that they look down on you and think that they should be the one who has that watch, who has that car, who has those fancy shoes, whatever it is. That's typically the way people react. Most people will react that way. And it's, and yet we're tricked into this idea, this illusion that because we have something that people, other people will see as a certain way. And I think that that's part of this whole equation. Now, getting back to the whole high school issue, this is where I think we've dropped the ball in our nation. Now, there is some theory, credible theory out there that the public school system was initially adopted this with this idea of the elites out there, the J.P. Morgans, the Rothschilds, the individuals who wanted to create worker bees, and they came up with the public school system. Now, think about it. Before there was public school, you had basically, one-room schoolhouses, that type of thing. You had basic education was just reading, writing, arithmetic, and maybe some, other things that you got along the way about life. Because if you can read, write, and do arithmetic, you should be able to learn. You can read about other things. You can, learn other things. And now, you have to be able to type and do the internet. But it's one of those things where you can expand based on those fundamentals. Whereas today, they have to learn all about social constructs and all this other stuff that you have to learn. That just becomes ridiculous. It has nothing to do with actual life in general and life in I would say, in any kind of a blessing kind of way in terms of being able to live a blessed, prosperous life. But getting back to the story, that this friend of mine, he has kind of broken in a big way some generational curses. I think that would kind of follow along with both sides of his family. His children are extremely prosperous now, amazingly enough, and it's one of those things where they just kind of, even at a very young age, they're very prosperous, and they're very productive. Now, how they manage their funds is, yet to be seen. But I think that because of their background and because of the way they've been brought up, they're going to be extremely successful individuals in life. And it has nothing to do with the finances. The finances kind of follow the character. It's typical of what happens. There are times when you can, because of your character, you might, there's all kinds of dynamics here that play into this whole thing. But my biggest key point here is that what I want to make is our public school system has denied us the opportunity to understand what wealth is, what taxes are, what prosperity is. It has tried to redefine it. Well, it hasn't even defined it. And we think about, there was a fellow this morning, I heard him talking about how, about half of his income is paid out in taxes. And this lady disagreed with him. Oh, no, it's not. You don't pay half your money in taxes. When you add up sales tax, so you get taxed when you make it, you get taxed when you buy it. And even after you buy it, if you own a home, which I think this is the most immoral tax on the planet, if you buy a home and you own land and you own property, the government now comes along and says, well, because you own that, this is a form of wealth tax, by the way. Because you own that, we're going to charge you a tax for just for owning it. Well, because you get public services, you get your school, you get your fire department, you get all those other things. I think there should be a way to opt out of that, or to pay for that in another way. Now, in fact, the state of Indiana tried to do this. I think I've talked about this before. I'll talk about it again. The state of Indiana tried to do away with that. They tried to do away with the property tax by increasing the sales tax. That way, everybody coming through Indiana helps to pay for all the services. If you're driving through Indiana and your car catches on fire, they're going to call the fire department. You don't pay property tax there, but now all of a sudden you're using the services. That's just the way that works. So I think in many ways we don't really understand the dynamics of taxes and your life. You're giving half of your life to the government basically because this is the deal between you and your employer, or if you're busy, have a business owner, you're working, you're trading your life for that in exchange for those funds. You're giving yourself almost in a kind of labor type way. You're giving your time and your labor over to someone else. And then that brings in a whole other issue, bunch of issues about you know, homesteading and dynamics and what it takes to survive and what, you know, the independence that we should be experiencing in this country, it puts us into a serf mentality, I almost use the word slave, but a serf mentality where we are worker bees. There are serfs and kings and lords and you're kind of working for them in a sense. And this whole thing with what's happening in Minnesota, I think just it accentuates that whole process. They think that they're above the law. They think that they're above all this stuff. All this money just comes from nowhere, and it means nothing to anybody because it's just a bunch of tax money. So it's a wealthy nation. We can afford it. And the wealthiest nation in the world. We can afford health care. Just yeah, whatever. Folks, I will talk to you on Monday, hopefully. I will be traveling, but I'll be trying to talk to you. God bless. Have a great weekend. Shabbat shalom. 812-379-8778. Let me know what you think about it. See ya.